This episode is sponsored by Jacobson Real Estate Company. Are you ready to find your dream home? Or maybe you're thinking about selling and want the best deal possible? Well, look no further. At Jacobson Real Estate Company, we make buying or selling your home smooth, stress-free, and exciting. With 50-plus years of experience and a deep knowledge of the Winona, Minnesota area market, we specialize in turning your real estate goals into reality. Whether it's finding that perfect neighborhood, negotiating top dollar for your property, or answering all of your questions along the way, we're here for you. Plus, with our personalized approach, you're not just a client, you're family. So why wait? Let Jacobson Real Estate Company open the door to your future. Call us today at 507-313-2716 or visit our website at jacobsonrealestatecompany.com. Because your next chapter starts here. Buy, sell, invest. Jacobson Real Estate Company. Welcome to this week's edition of Brews and Crews. I am your host, Chris Jacobson, and today's guest has helped save over 3,000 animals and changed thousands of lives along the way. From heartbreak to hope, Amy Baker from Tales of Hope, Wisconsin, joins me to share the real story behind the rescue work. Amy, welcome in.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
And I'm so glad you came, and you actually brought the new bus that you guys have. Because what did you have before?
So initially, when we first started, how back do you want to?
Whenever it started.
Oh, so when we started in 2019, we used to rent minivans.
Rent them.
We used to rent them, okay. And we would drive them down to Texas and fill them with crates and bring dogs back. And then eventually we bought a minivan, and then we grew out of that. So we bought a Ford Transit van, and now we've grown out of that. So now we bought a shuttle bus.
And you brought that shuttle bus here, and it's big. It's very clean for the moment.
For the moment.
Yes, but it looks very organized. I mean, you have crates in there, big to small. You have the sizes of collars, look like sweaters in there for
sweaters
the animals.
And jackets.
That's crazy.
This time of year, they need them. You know, it's cold outside. They're coming from El Paso. A lot of them aren't acclimated to the weather, so it's important that, you know, they're comfortable when they get here.
Yeah, this is a different one. We have a rescue dog ourselves, and I think he was from Texas too.
Sure.
And he doesn't really care much for the winters. This past winter, he would go out and he would do his business and he was right back in.
It was cold this year though. I mean, I think even local dogs were feeling that.
It certainly was. Now I want to get back all the way to the start of this because you were highly requested. First of all, I've put out there every so often on the Facebook page, tag some people that you think should be on, and you've been tagged in both of the posts I've done that on. So I'm so glad you're actually here. So thank you once again. But I want to go all the way back to the start in 2019, when all this started or how it became or where the idea
came from.
Yeah.
First of all, it's humbling to be nominated or requested or whatever. So I'm always grateful for those things or when people do those things or say things like that. But this all kind of came about. I got terminal cancer in 2013. I was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic melanoma. And I had a rare form where I had tumors that were like subcutaneous. They were inoperable. And I ended up with 18 tumors. I went through years and years of chemotherapy. I got really, really sick. I had to stop working. And I wanted to do something. I couldn't do a lot, but, you know, I couldn't hardly walk through the house. So I, you know, started volunteering for Humane Society. And then I went to another Humane Society. And then I learned that I don't necessarily like to follow other people's rules, because I got asked to take in a blind and deaf puppy, and it was a little 8-week old Aussie puppy, and the Humane Society that I was volunteering for didn't want to take her because she wouldn't be easily adoptable and probably would cost a lot of money. So that's kind of how I started. I was like, I don't want to follow those rules. And so she's still alive. She lives in Indiana.
Oh, the dog does?
Yeah, I got her a flight to another rescue in Indiana. She's doing fantastic. Her name is Adora, and yeah, she's living her best life. So
a blind and deaf dog.
Yeah, blind and deaf Aussie.
That would be tough.
I have three in the rescue now.
How did you train the dog?
No.
No? So how did the dog acclimate, like, when it's blind and deaf?
They do.
Really?
They really do. So Over the years, we've had plenty of dogs that are blind or deaf or some, because people breed the Merle into the Aussies wanting that like gray, black, flecked color of a coat. So they breed those together and then you end up with dogs with burst effects.
Oh, okay.
So that's where you get the blindness and the deafness from. But these dogs do fantastic. And a lot of times you can teach them sign language if they can see at all. Or you can teach them hand signals. Or with the ones that are blind and deaf, you can teach them body language by tapping.
Okay.
You know, so like if you want them to sit, you tap them on the butt. If you want them to do, I don't know, all the stuff. But, you know, there's different things. But they function really, really, really well.
Sure.
It's incredible.
It sounds tough. As a human, it sounds absolutely tough.
Yeah. Yeah, but dogs are resilient. And
I know. They adapt to everything, it seems.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
So what was the problem that you were trying, when you started this, what was the problem you were trying to solve by starting up Tales of Hope?
Because when I took in that puppy, she had nowhere to go. Nobody would take her. The Humane Society wouldn't take her. Nobody wanted her. And so I wanted to help those animals that people didn't want. And so that's kind of how it started. And
yep.
Then it just... I don't know. It just blew up
because of that.
Just that one dog. And then,
sure.
And then it was, you know, well then what I did was wanted to really start doing rescue, but I didn't know how to do it. And I didn't know where to, you know, I didn't know anything. So I started reaching out to Humane Societies. So like in Golden Valley, Minnesota, there's a big one, or down in Milwaukee, Madison. I reached out to these Humane Societies because they're always saying they're full, they need help. So I reached out to see, can I pull dogs from you and bring them into my rescue? They wouldn't allow me to pull dogs from the shelter. They wanted me to take the ones that were aggressive and unadoptable.
Sure, sure.
So yeah. Then I contacted somebody from Winona Humane and was, you know, chatting with her, and she had a connection in Texas. And so it was born that, you know, we started rescuing dogs from Texas.
Sure.
And that was, I think, in the first year. And so now that's just where my passion is.
Is there a reason from Texas or why you go down to the Texas area?
So in the South, the culture is very different than what it is here.
Okay.
Dogs are more considered property than they are considered like a family member or pets. So with the climate being so different there, most dogs live outside. So even your Chihuahuas or your tiny breeds, they live in people's backyards. And because they're considered more of a property than a pet, people don't really vet them like they do here. You know, they don't get them health care. They don't spay and neuter. They don't care as much. So then you end up with all those unwanted animals because they dump litters out in the country. And, you know, the dogs are just breeding all year round.
Sure.
And there's just not enough people to help. And
so those dogs basically live outside then.
They do.
Okay. Yeah, not up here. I mean, I don't think they would survive well in negative 30-degree weather up here.
No, and the people are different here.
Sure.
When it comes to animals. You know, they view their animals more as a family member or a baby or a child as opposed to just being a livestock animal that lives in your backyard.
Sure, yeah. So that's why you go down there and get them from there?
Well, it kind of evolved into that.
Oh, okay.
You know, it started with I wanted to rescue dogs around, you know, Wisconsin and Minnesota. Didn't have the resources, didn't know how to start. And then, you know, I was connected with somebody in Texas. And then now my network is quite substantial. And so I've rescued from Kentucky, Louisiana, New Orleans, Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Like all over... Not all over the country. I don't think we've gotten that far over to like California, but I did get New Mexico once.
Sure.
So, and then we've also adopted out to some far states like Connecticut, and we did have somebody apply from Canada, but it didn't work out. But you know, it's just such a crazy world when you start to get behind the scenes.
Sure. Is there other people doing something similar that you're doing around the country?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's big right now.
So do you guys all have kind of like a community together, or you don't know anyone else really?
I do, but, you know, life is busy, right? I work a full-time job.
Sure.
I'm running this rescue, and I have a family. I have kids. And so I have enough taking up the time that I have than to get involved in other people's business, so to speak.
Sure.
So I keep my circle small and I manage what I can manage.
Okay. Well, I didn't realize you had a full-time job too, because you're traveling and going down to the Texas area. That's at least probably one day there and one day back is my imagination.
Yep.
So are you doing those on your off days then?
Yeah, on Saturdays and Sundays.
Sure.
So next Saturday we will leave. We leave at about 5 o'clock in the morning. We go down to Tulsa, get settled in, and then we're up at about 3:30 in the morning, get all the dogs loaded up, and head back.
Wow.
And then I drive all the way to Eau Claire.
Oh.
And then back to Alma.
So when you go and pick them up, you pick up the dogs, and you're driving back with them. I assume it's loud, possibly?
It's loud when you start.
Okay.
And it's loud when you're loading. But once you get on the road and you get driving,
uh-huh.
you know, it's freeway, so it's just a nice, steady travel. They really do settle.
Sure.
And they calm down, and they all snuggle up together, and we keep their crates pretty cozy. They all seem to do very, very well, unless you stop for gas. Then, of course, you know, it riles everybody up a little bit, but... for the most part, they're quiet.
Do you ever get any funny looks at the gas station? Like, what is going on inside that vehicle?
Yeah, sometimes when you have to open one of the doors and there's, you know, Tetris crates everywhere, you know, the other people will take a look. Some people will come over and ask questions. They want to know what you're doing. More so when we're loading, you know, because our rescue partners, Paws of Promise, in El Paso, Texas, they drive a bus and meet us in Oklahoma.
Okay.
And Care Rescue that we work with out of Coweta, Oklahoma, she meets us there as well. So a lot of times people will be like, what are you guys doing? You know, there's crates everywhere, and then there's all these dogs, and, you know, it's pretty loud and chaotic at that time. So, yeah, that's when we get asked the most questions.
Will you have a logo on the side of your bus?
Eventually.
Well, then I feel like people will be like, oh, I understand what's going on here. Not just a vehicle with a bunch of dogs barking.
I really want to get a wrap on this one.
Okay.
Because I like the black and the silver theme. You know, we're trying to be cohesive in what we're doing. So we're recognizable, but it costs money to do that.
Yes,
so
it does.
It'll be a while. And we just had a fire a couple weeks ago.
Well, I heard about that, and I guess I didn't understand what fully it was about. I mean, do you want to speak on that?
Yeah. So Tales of Hope runs out of my home for the most part.
Okay.
And so, we have an outbuilding right outside of our home. It's kind of like an overflow garage shed area where we keep a lot of stuff. That's where I store a lot of the Tales of Hope stuff that I use every day or on a regular basis, or our transport stuff, you know, like bins with our leashes, collars, potty pads, things like that. And we had an extension cord in there that must have sparked, and my fleece blankets from the winter, you know, that I stock up on when Menards has their $1.99 sale.
Yep.
Yeah, I go buy like 300 of them.
Sure.
Yeah, well, those caught on fire, I think, and then,
wow.
So we lost a lot of the rescue stuff, but the community's been amazing in helping to, you know, build up our supply of stuff again. So now we're good, but still costs money to do. So if anybody knows anybody who does anything for cheap or low cost, we would love to get the van wrapped.
Okay. Yes.
That's the goal now.
Well, maybe this will reach someone that can say that, because there's a lot of people that like to help out, especially in the animal world. I know in this area, there's a lot of heart for animals, because like you said up here, animals to us are like family members. They're not just cattle or a piece of property. So that's very interesting. And I'm sure there'll be people that'll step up to the plate, because sounds like there's a big following just from what I've seen and I've read online. It sounds like you got a huge following of people, so that's also good as well. So what are some of the biggest challenges that you have that people don't see? Because it's probably like you tell them, oh, I go down, I go grab dogs, and I come on back. It sounds easy, but I can only imagine there's way more to it. What are some of the biggest challenges that you've had in the last, well, 6-7 years now?
The growth has been challenging. Like, just as an example, from year 2024 to 25, we had 39% growth. That's just huge. And so trying to manage that amongst a team of people who are all volunteers and no one gets paid, you know, so trying to balance out, I don't want to burn out our volunteers.
Mm-hmm, right.
I don't want to put more on them than what they can handle to the point where it's affecting their lifestyle with their families, because really this was my choice to start this rescue. If it affects my life, then that's fine, but it shouldn't negatively affect anybody else, right? So I think that has been my biggest challenge in what I'm doing, because, you know, at this point we have 160 foster families.
160?
160.
Wow.
And so we're bringing up 60 to 80 dogs every
trip,
4 to 6 weeks.
Is that every trip or is that?
Every trip.
Okay.
Every 4 to 6 weeks.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
It's quite a few.
It's a lot. And so then, you know, it's like about 2 to 3 weeks before transport, I start, you know, getting all the pictures of the dogs that are available to come, getting them together, putting them out to fosters, letting them tag them, whatever. And then we start posting on our Facebook. And then, you know, once the dogs are, you know, kind of all set, now we're a week away. Well, then I got to start putting medical into our software, you know, and entering the dogs into the software. And then we've got new fosters to onboard. And yeah, it's a business.
Yeah, you got to put in, what were you putting into the computer?
So we use software. So,
okay.
So when, you know, Bingo is coming up on transport, well, he had vaccinations and he has a health certificate and he has, any kind of medical history, we want that in our system so that we can forward or pass that on to the adopter. And then we know, you know, is he up to date with what he needs? Is this a healthy dog?
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to adopt out a dog that's sick or has medical needs unless it's something like, yeah, this dog obviously is missing a leg. So
yeah,
we can't fix that. But if it's fixable, we want to fix it. And so we get all that medical for the dogs and then we enter it all in, which is a huge process as well.
That sounds like you need a tech person standby.
We do very well. I mean, the team is very self-sufficient, and this is not, I always tell people, this is not my rescue anymore. You know, it's outgrown me.
Sure.
Now it's every single person in the rescue who supports us.
Yeah.
You know, and every volunteer that comes to help at events or people who donate, you know, even if it's $10, mm-hmm. I know that $10 is probably a lot for that person. So, you know, this rescue belongs to everybody. It's
sure.
not just mine, not anymore.
So when it comes to the foster people, you said you have about 160?
About 160.
So is there a process that they have to go through to become a foster
yep.
family?
You have to fill out an application.
Okay.
We're pretty fussy about who watches our dogs,
okay.
who takes care of our dogs. I've had people try to steal the dogs. I've actually had people steal the dogs twice. So I'm really fussy now. I'm very careful. I ask a lot of questions. And the same thing with adopters. We're super fussy. We have a whole team that works to do background checks. They look people up on social media. They use like CCAP and we use Truth Finder.
Sure.
Just to make sure that, you know, we don't have somebody applying that's a felon or,
yeah.
you know, that has abused, you know, women and children or whatever. We want good quality people adopting our dogs.
Yeah, that I would be a little nervous on that too, because 160, that's a lot of people. Do they all have them at one time, or are there some people that don't have one at the moment and they're just waiting for the next one?
Everybody has their own shtick, right?
Okay.
Some people don't ever not have a foster. Some fosters have 2 or 3 fosters. And some will take breaks, like maybe they'll only foster twice a year.
Okay.
So everybody's a little bit different on what they can handle in their household. Some people foster one time, they adopt the dog they foster, and then they don't foster again.
Okay.
So I let everybody choose what works for them and who they want to foster. And I don't have a lot of rules, but I'm strict with my rules. So I don't know, for some reason it's working.
That's good though, because you don't want them to go to an abusive home that
right.
they're already coming from a problem situation to begin with. So when it comes to the fosters, do some of them take them then? Like,
yeah.
do they adopt them eventually?
Yeah, okay. There's always a handful
yeah.
coming off of transport that, like, right now with this next transport, I've got a couple people who are pretty excited. They're like, I know I'm not going to let the dog go. So I already know there's going to be a few that are going.
Yeah.
But then there's also like, I have to share this while I'm thinking of this. I got a phone call from Jen at Barks and Rec in Eau Claire the other day asking for help looking for a dog for a little boy that is terminally ill.
Okay.
So one of our dogs that's coming up is going to this, hopefully, if the dog fits, is going to this little boy, and we are sponsoring the adoption fee.
Oh.
So I was like so excited to have the opportunity to be something like that or be a part of their life or that story and be able to change their life. So it becomes not just about the dogs either. It's also about the people.
Right. Yeah. And dogs are, from what I understand, they can lower blood pressure. They can lower stress. And that's really cool.
They can also raise it.
They can also raise it. Yeah, I know when the barking goes off, that would raise mine too. But I remember when we had our two dogs that we had before, you come home and they just run up to you, and everything that was bad that day was fantastic at that point.
Yeah.
So that's really neat that you're gonna sponsor basically. So you're gonna take care of the adoption fee, and this little boy is gonna get a dog.
Yeah.
Is it a certain like breed that they wanted, or?
I got very limited criteria, and so I just took a look at, I have one dog in-house right now that I think would be a really great fit, and then I have one coming up on transport that I would think would be a great fit, so she sent the pictures to them, and so, you know, if he chooses one of those dogs, it will be, you know, 100% vetted. It will also have a Fi GPS tracking collar with a 6-month subscription.
Okay.
And be microchipped. Leash and collar. I'm donating a crate. So I just want to make his life special.
I got a question about the microchipping. What is that? I've heard that in dogs. I've never had a dog with a microchip in it. So
what
is? Yeah. I mean, I bought him from a puppy, so I didn't microchip him. So I have no idea what that means.
What's your dog's name?
Well, okay, so the dog that we have right now, we inherited from my aunt who passed away. But the ones that I had before that, we just bought them from a person that had dogs for sale.
Well, what's your dog's name?
Enzo.
So if Enzo takes off,
yep.
Right, you guys are gone on vacation, you're in Mexico, and somebody's watching your dog, and Enzo takes off, and he just runs, mm-hmm. right? And some stranger picks up Enzo that, you know, is driving down the road.
Okay.
Well, he can take Enzo to a vet or like a sheriff's department, and they can scan him for a microchip, and then that is linked to you.
Oh.
So then that finder can call you and say, hey, are you missing Enzo?
Sure.
And you can be like, yeah, that's my dog.
Oh.
So it links you to the dog as, you know, the owner of the dog.
Okay. Oh, so it's almost like a permanent collar.
Kind of.
Yeah, that way. Well, I had never heard of that until not too long ago. And so this dog that we have is, we might have to get that updated because it's probably under her name at this point. We'll probably have to update it to our name. But my parents are kind of the ones that take care of him the most. But I bring him to the office almost every single day. So he hangs out with me quite a bit as well. So I just wanted to ask that because I've never seen that ever happen. But so you just take it to a vet, they can scan the dog,
yep,
and it just says
who
the owners. That's pretty cool, because if you lost the collar, you wouldn't know who the dog was for.
Yeah, and, you know, it just gives you a little bit of added security. And then we just partnered with Fi, who...
That's Fi, right?
Yeah.
I've seen those collars.
Yeah, so it's a GPS collar.
Okay.
We just had a dog go missing, Calvin, on our last transport, or after our last transport. And he ended up getting hit by a car.
Oh, no.
We just couldn't find him. No matter, you know, we're out there with cameras and... Yeah, it's a whole thing. But he ended up getting hit by a car, and I had to put him down. And it's heartbreaking to, you know, go through all of that and mm-hmm. then to have to put him down. So we partnered with Fi, who has GPS collars. So now all of our dogs will have a GPS collar on at all times. So I can see on my phone, and the foster family will be able to see on their phone. If a dog should happen to go missing, you know, we'll be able to see where it is at all times.
Sure.
And then that collar also transfers to the adopter. And then they get a 6-month subscription for this GPS collar.
That's
so
cool.
Really a cool thing.
Now, have you ever had, when you brought dogs up, that were violent? I assume maybe you haven't had to. I don't know. Or any of them
What
that,
do you mean by violent?
Like maybe needed a muzzle because they would bite possibly?
I did have one that bit me a couple of transports ago. Bit my finger, but he was just scared.
Sure.
But I had blood dripping from my finger, but I'm so used to getting bit that it doesn't even bother me anymore. Like, I just don't care. But my rescue partners are really great about, you know, fielding the dogs for us. Like, they're already in homes. They do their best to make sure, like, are these dogs good with other dogs? Are they good with cats?
Yeah.
That way, when they come here, we're not putting our foster families or their animals in jeopardy or anything like that.
That's another thing I was going to ask you, and you just already touched on it, was what if they don't get along with the other dogs or something that you have, which it can happen. It happens all the time. I had a dog that didn't like certain size dogs, but the little ones he was just terrified of. He was an English Mastiff, and he wanted to go and fight the big dogs, but then a little dog about 10 pounds comes in, and he's like just definitely
scared.
It's all
attitude.
I know.
It's just attitude.
Well, the little dog had Napoleon syndrome.
That's what I mean. He had in his mind, he was bigger.
Yeah.
Right? So he could control that big dog because in his mind, he was bigger.
Yeah.
But it does happen. So then in those kinds of instances, then we just move the dog. You know,
Sure.
We have some, like Brittany Halama at Springbrook Dog Resort, she in Whitehall. She is that person a lot where it's like, hey, I've got a dog I have to move because, you know, resident dog isn't getting along. So, you know, we're shuffling dogs around. So it does happen. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen.
Yeah. Now, you said that when you come back up from Oklahoma area, you actually go around to other places. Is that where the foster people are? Or?
Yeah. So our foster base is like all over Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Okay.
So kind of depending on where the fosters are located, I will make little drop off points. So I have some that are in Rochester, Stuartville area. That will be our first stop if they're fostering on this particular trip.
Sure.
Otherwise, we start in Winona and then we run up the Wisconsin side to Eau Claire.
Okay.
And I make different stops along the way. But just recently, I don't know what it is, but with this transport, I have like five or six new fosters starting from, they live in Green Bay, Fond du Lac.
Fond du Lac, okay.
Fond du Lac, Milwaukee. So I don't know how all of a sudden we're jumping to the other side of the state, but I have fosters that are starting that live on the other side of the state, and it's great. You know, the more dogs we can save, the better.
Yeah, that really is. That's really cool. But it's awesome that it's expanding. And like you said earlier, it's kind of expanding past you now. Like, you got to have a whole team.
Yeah.
And it's all volunteer-based from what you told me as well. So
yeah.
That's very interesting. So what are when you have this team of people, how do you stay organized? Or does everyone just kind of know what their job is and they just know what to do? Because how many people do you have volunteer, I guess, is the first question.
So at this point, I think it's just a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
You know, after 7 years, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
And, you know, hiccups and speed bumps and victories, it really kind of runs itself now. It's still a lot of work, but a lot of the people that are in the rescue have been with me for like 5 years.
Okay.
So they just do what they do. You know, I might change things now and then or change a process or add to or remove from. But for the most part, everybody just does what they do. And it's seamless at this point.
Sure. So you kind of built it up through those last 7 years, which you think about it, 7 years isn't that long ago.
Feels like a long time.
I suppose you have some pretty busy days out there. And then still,
every day.
And then it's still you're doing your full-time job on top of this.
I'm at the breaking point. Like, I can't continue with the amount of work to run the rescue. Because if you think about it, it's a business. I think people forget that it's a business, but it's still a business. So that's 160 people that you're managing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of at a breaking point. Like, I don't know how much longer I can do both.
Sure.
It's getting challenging for sure.
Now, you have a family, correct, you said?
Yes.
Do they help out?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Depends on what it is.
I assume kids, you got kids out?
I have a 14-year-old daughter.
Okay.
She doesn't really, she used to be really into the dogs.
Sure.
Now she's just like, ugh, there's just so many of them. She just sees them all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and my husband, he likes to look at the dogs and sometimes pet the dogs, but that's about it.
Okay.
But my husband's very helpful in like, hey, I need to do this with the van or I need something with the bus.
Sure.
Or,
yep.
You know, help me move some stuff. And then my daughter Addie goes on transports with us, and so she hands out medications, and she's starting to get to that age where she can take on more roles. So it's definitely helping with teaching her responsibility
yep.
and helping her to be accountable for things. So, I mean, there's good in it, but yeah, it's still mostly on my shoulders.
Okay. Well, now I want to go off of that. That's basically on your shoulders. And I want to know, as you've gone through these last 7 years, how was it when you had, obviously the leader, how was it at first when you had to tell people, this is what you need to do, this is what you got to do, and knowing that they're volunteering their time, did you ever feel like maybe you were too pushy, or because you want to be nice to everyone, obviously, but
right.
things have to get done, but they're also not getting paid because it's a nonprofit, so how did you deal with that?
It's still that way. Like, I have to remember that this is people's time and that their energy that they're sacrificing to help with my mission. I think of it as my mission. I'm sure it's everybody's mission, but I have to be cognizant of that all the time. When I first started, I was called quite a few names.
Really?
That were tough. Like, I remember being called a tyrant, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people probably called me a bitch, and it probably still happens these times too, but one of my volunteers, Tori, I'll never forget her telling me, like, just because somebody said that doesn't mean that that's what you are, right? Because you led strong, you believed in your convictions, and look what you've built.
Yeah.
So if I would have folded and let people push me down, I maybe wouldn't have what we have. But now we have really great, solid people that have been with us. Like, Amber has been with us since the beginning. She was my first foster.
Okay.
She's still with us. So I think, you know, just having a little bit of a backbone and standing true to what the vision is, but being kind.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have that balance. But I really feel like it's what has made us grow so fast.
Sure. And is there a time that you remember that it really taught you a lesson? Did you do like a mistake that maybe you made? Because I'm sure there's been mistakes along the way.
I've made so many mistakes.
Is there one that stands out at all? Like, oh, I really learned my lesson because of that.
Maybe don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Meaning?
You put your trust into all of these people, right? Like, I work full-time jobs, so I can't see everything all the time. I can't be in everything. But I really can't trust any one person to do everything.
Sure.
So there needs to be more people involved, more committees or more teams, people checking each other's work, things like that. Just to be holding people accountable and make sure people are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Yep.
So,
okay. So those are some lessons that you've learned along the way. And then
that was a big lesson.
Yeah.
That was a hard lesson.
Well, because you're starting this and probably had no idea of how this works. You're just, let's just start doing this. And here we are. I mean, just like my podcast here, I didn't know what I was doing at first. I just sat down and started BSing with my wife and my friends. And now all of a sudden I'm getting people that want to be on and they want to talk about something that they're passionate about or something they want to promote. And then all of a sudden it's turned into something totally different. And I'm not at the point where I need any extra hands really, only when I have virtual ones. So I have a buddy that comes in and helps me do virtual ones if necessary. And he's a really nice guy, but I understand what you're talking about. Cause all of a sudden you're like, I'm going to go rescue dogs. I'm going to, you know, that's what we're going to do. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, now I got foster people here, there, and we're traveling everywhere. Yeah. And that's really cool though. So now this is a nonprofit. Is that correct?
Yes.
So how do you, I'm assuming at first it came out of your own pocket. You're just doing this from the kindness of your heart with your own money.
The first few years. Yeah. We weren't profitable.
Sure.
We were in the negative a lot. My savings, my paychecks, anything in the beginning. And then, you know, donations and things like that to help cover costs. So it was, there was quite a few years where, it was all me.
Sure, and that's got to be tough because people have to donate. And you got to ask for donations. And sometimes that might seem a little odd to do, asking for donations. But I also think there's a lot of people that want to donate for this cause of these issues of animals need rescuing. And some people can foster, some people can donate time, some people can donate money. So that's got to be kind of awesome and also tough at the same time, because I've had to ask for money for when I was working at a school. We had to ask for sponsors and stuff like that. And it's not always the easiest. Because
it's humbling.
It really is, because you got to kind of go in and give them your elevator pitch real quick. And then hopefully they understand and they believe in what you're doing, especially what you're doing. But it is always tough and sometimes awkward to ask for money. And
it's always very awkward to ask for money. I struggle with it a little bit, because I feel like, okay, well, we actually have some money in the bank and we're doing okay right now. Why would I ask for donations? But at the same time, I don't want to deplete what we have. And then all of a sudden we're back to where we were, you know, when we were struggling. So I'm trying to find that happy balance of just managing a business this size, which I've never done before. So, and realizing that people want to be part of it. Right. It's not always about hey, can you help us do this? It's sometimes maybe hey, do you want to be part of this? We have a dog that's going to be coming on our next transport who is going in this coming Monday. He's having a double back leg amputation and his tail amputated.
Whoa.
I know. It's crazy. I've never had a dog like this. I get really excited about the special needs dogs that, you know, people are like, oh, you should just put that dog down. He's such a happy dog and he's young. He can live a great life. So then I'm like, okay, do we post out there to do a fundraiser and try to raise some money, or how do we navigate this? So I kind of stuck there sometimes a little bit, but you know, it all works out in the end somehow.
So when it comes to an amputation, did that come out of your pocket then, or the funds for Tales of Hope?
Yeah. So Paws of Promise out of El Paso, Elena, she is my bestie. I love her. She is so passionate about these dogs. She's out in the desert crawling in culverts, pulling puppies out of ditches. I mean, she's nuts. And so the other day she messaged me asking about Bruce, this dog. And she's like, please say you'll take him. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take him. And then we kind of collaborate together. So, you know, she has a big vet bill that she needs to be paid from other dogs down there. And then, of course, we've got Bruce. So what I told her is why don't you fundraise for one and I'll fundraise for the other? That way we're not double dipping anywhere, but we're covering those costs because vetting is expensive. So,
yeah. So a double amputated dog back legs?
Both back legs and tail.
And tail. What happened? Do you, no idea?
Nope.
The vet just said, so will he have a wheelchair?
He will.
Yeah, okay.
He doesn't yet.
I've seen those, the wheelchairs on the back and the two legs. And yeah. They just go.
But have you ever seen a dog with two legs that can balance?
Oh, yeah. On the front?
And they run on two legs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will Bruce need to learn that?
I don't know. I'm so excited. I will keep you posted.
That would be interesting to see that, because I have seen that, but it's a little TikTok and stuff like that.
It doesn't seem real because it's something else somewhere else that you've never seen before.
So. I know. So when you started this out, did you ever imagine saving this many dogs?
No.
Did you just do dogs or did you do cats too? Or, well, tail, anything with a tail, I guess.
We do primarily dogs. I really try to stay away from cats because it's a niche thing. And so many places do cats, right? Like humane societies, they have room. I don't do a lot of cats. My primary focus is on dogs, and it's dogs with special needs. You know, of course, we do every dog, and we take every breed, and we take every age, and we'll take them with no jaw, no eyes, missing legs. There's so many different people in this rescue that are into different things. And so sometimes the more broken, the better.
Sure. And so have you adopted your own dogs, bringing them up before?
I have adopted one.
Only one. Okay.
But she didn't come from Texas. She was local.
From up in Minnesota, Wisconsin area?
In Wisconsin. Okay. Yep. She was local to Wisconsin. And so I've adopted one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've only gotten to one. And I feel like if I did this, I would fall in love with all the dogs because I'm a dog lover. And so is my wife. And I feel like we would just have...
You should foster, Chris. You should foster.
We have an 8-month-old baby that I'm fostering right now.
Oh my gosh.
She's a great girl, but I couldn't... We had a dog and he actually passed away from aggressive liver cancer literally in 5 days after we found out that he had it. And honestly... He was a good dog and he was really laid back, but I couldn't imagine right now that we don't have a dog, having a dog plus a newborn baby. It would have been a lot of work at the moment. I know you got something to say about it.
No, I was, but no.
Yeah. So, I mean, we always thought about that, but I think we would fall in love with too many of them when we'd have this whole thing of dogs.
You want to know what I tell people about that when people tell me that? And this is not to be rude or bitchy or snarky. That's a really selfish reason to not foster,
sure.
right? Because there's so many dogs out there that need help and they're dying. Like they're suffering. They're living in the desert. They're starving to death
mm-hmm.
or they're locked in a shelter and they're, you know, it's not their fault. And if everybody could just foster one dog, it would make such a huge difference.
Sure.
Right. And yeah, sometimes there's times when I adopt out dogs and I sit in my vehicle and I just bawl because I fell in love with that dog for whatever reason. But my reason for going into fostering wasn't to adopt dogs. It was to foster dogs and save lives. And
sure.
So
yep.
I think I have commitment issues at this moment because I don't know. I always want to keep the dog and I say I'm going to keep the dog, but I never keep the dog.
Sure.
I don't know why.
Yeah. And after you do it for so long, does the feelings kind of go away? Like this is more than just obviously saving, or this is more than adopting dogs and having feelings about saving dogs.
Yeah.
So I feel the same way. I'm a real estate agent, so I've never gotten attached to a house. And some people are like, well, and you know, I thought this last house that I sold and we moved into a new one, we brought our newborn baby there. That's where both of our dogs were. That's where they both passed away at. I thought when we moved, I was going to have a tough time and I just like, nope, next house.
You're
I guess,
like, see ya.
But see, it's my job. So like when I sell and buy and sell houses and help people do it, it's just kind of the thing. So I kind of understand where you're coming from on that aspect.
Yeah. And it's hard to say that like dog rescue is a business. And I've gotten a little criticized for that because I'm supposed to be rescuing dogs. It's still a business. Mm-hmm. Like we have bills to pay. We pay insurance. We have overhead. We have to, you know, There's so much that happens behind the scenes and it's, you know, somebody's got to do all that.
Right. You know? Yeah. It doesn't just get done.
Right. I think last year we paid like $236,000 in vet bills or something.
Whoa.
So like all of that stuff has to be done. It doesn't just do itself just because we're rescuing dogs.
Right.
It's still a business.
Yep. And that's some of those behind the scenes things that people don't see. Like you got a vet bill and someone's got to pay it and it comes out of the donations and someone's got to mark down that it was taken care of and things like that. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff other than just going down and transporting them back to foster families. So totally understand that.
We're making the decisions on does a dog live or die?
Yeah.
Does a dog come into rescue? You know, and then sometimes I feel like I have the weight of all 15,000 followers on Facebook with those decisions because am I going to get criticized if I put this dog down?
Yeah.
You know, it gets in my head sometimes. And I feel like sometimes it's a lot of responsibility, but you know, that I think that's probably been the hardest.
Yeah.
Like when we put Calvin down, that was challenging.
Was that the dog that got hit by a vehicle?
Yeah.
Right, and you got 15,000 followers.
Something like that.
Wow, that's pretty good. Just over 7 years.
That's because
awesome.
We have a bomb social media team.
Okay.
They just are fantastic. So, yeah.
Is it some young kids that know what they're doing?
A variety of different women who are all independent professionals in the industries that they're in.
Okay.
It's just some people that wanted to do some fun stuff and they've been a team for a long time and they are just wonderful.
Well, and see, that's the thing. Everyone can help out in certain aspects. And,
yeah.
And I'm assuming they're volunteering their time with the social media team. So, and you know, that's one thing I'm working at. I'm trying to get to 2,000 followers. I'm working and I found out that here's a funny story. I went out to a bar one night for one of my wife's friend's birthdays, and we were in Austin, Minnesota. And I went up and I'm like, there's 8 people at the bar right now. They're all sitting on their cell phone. What if I went over and bought them all a shot? But what they had to do was invite all of their friends to like Brews and Cruise podcast. And I did that, and the shot was like $2 each. So you're like, $16 is all it cost. And then I had all of my wife's friends do it too. And by the next day or by the next week, I had like 700 new followers. I'm like, all right, so I got to pay for my followers, but at least I know they're not bots. That's the one thing.
That's true.
I was always worried about like, if I send out an ad on Facebook,
will
I just get a bunch of bots liking my stuff, which doesn't help me out.
Ads and it's not happened to us.
Really?
We get hecklers sometimes, like
hecklers,
you know, people that are ridiculous, but Yeah. I don't know. I use ads quite a bit.
Okay. And that's one thing I was thinking about too. And also I do giveaways. So people were really like getting excited about that. And the last one I gave away, 2 bars of soap from the 1924.
You saw that one?
People love that soap, I guess. and a hoodie sweatshirt is all it was. And it was 147 shares. And it got me a lot of followers. So I said the next one's at 2,000. So hopefully, maybe by the time this comes out, there'll be 2,000. Because I want to keep getting them bigger giveaways. I thought maybe like every... like 2,000 followers, I would have a $20 gift. And then 2,500 followers to be a $25 giveaway. And then all the way up to 10,000 be 100. And you just keep going.
You just keep adding on.
So right now you'd be at like a $150 gift of 15,000 people.
Yeah, well, let's not go that far. I mean, I'll try my best.
You are nonprofit.
I will try my best.
Yes. Now, I want to ask you a question because I think some people are going to have this. Is what's the difference between what you do and what the Humane Societies do?
Our dogs live in a home.
Right? For the fosters, so, right?
Yep, they're all in foster homes. We crate train, or we start them crate training. Depends on the age of the dog, of course. But, you know, if they're too young, we wait until they're age appropriate. But all of our dogs are crate trained. They, you know, they're leash training. They're learning house manners. They, you know, they're living in a home. So, you know, kind of when you go to the Humane Society, you're seeing what a dog looks like in a cage as opposed to, you know, me being able to tell you, this is how this dog behaves in my home.
Yeah.
And in different situations.
Do people report back then when they have the fosters, like, hey, this is what they do well at, this is what not so good? Do they do
that? Even the foster homes?
Yeah. Do they report back so that the next person that wants to adopt the dog has an idea of what the temperament is? Because like you were saying, at a Humane Society, you go there, you kind of see they're just sitting in a kennel, and you don't know how they're going to act when you get them home.
So every foster writes a bio for their dog that gets posted on our website or is on Facebook. Right.
Okay.
So the foster is writing that bio, and then the foster is the final decision maker with the adopter. So if you applied to adopt a dog, you would talk to the foster, and the foster would be able to tell you, this is how the dog behaves. And then you can ask 100 questions, and we want to make sure it's the right match. You know, it's not just about like, Chris wants a dog, which one do you want? Like, okay, Chris wants a dog, but this is what your household looks like and your lifestyle looks like. Let's find one that makes sense.
Yeah. I got that, and actually some of our close friends actually adopted a dog from you guys.
Oh, did they?
Dave and Danielle Todd, they were actually on the podcast too. You probably don't know them. You've probably done this so many times, obviously. But they adopted a dog, and I was actually just on your Facebook page. That's what I've been doing right here. And the name was Cinderella, and it's a little black dog. And
how long ago?
July of 24. So that's Cinderella. And they adopted her from you guys.
What a cutie. Look at her little pink glasses.
I know. That's her little daughter, Harper. And they were just on the
podcast. She's adorable.
They were on the podcast not too long ago talking about they had a miscarriage. So that was another thing.
That's so sad.
But yeah, that's another one person that, you know, someone's helped adopt a dog from one of your fosters and got a good home. So that's really cool to see that. There's people around my friends that know this too. Yeah, that's awesome. What you do then is the people go to their fosters and then they get their homes from there rather than a Humane Society where they just are at a place and then you just go and adopt. Do you work alongside Humane Societies? Because I thought you kind of said earlier in the interview that you did.
Yeah, I work a lot with Cooley Humane. Amber is their dog director down there. She's fantastic. They actually just helped with a couple of bottle baby puppies that I had that I didn't have the capacity to be able to take over or to take on their care. And then we took literally like the day before, we took 5 puppies from them and put them on one of our pregnant moms. So they had a litter that was born without a mom. The mom died during labor. So we took those puppies and put them on a mom. They took my 2 puppies the next day and then they bottle fed. So like we work a lot together in tandem. And Cooley is now starting a low-cost bay neuter clinic.
Okay.
So super exciting. I'm going to give them a plug for that because vet care is so expensive. It's really difficult to find anywhere around here where you can spay and neuter at a reasonable price. So
what is like the average cost of a neuter spayed?
Depends on where it is, but I have vets all over Wisconsin and Minnesota, and I've paid as high as $750 for a neuter, $950 for a spay. The average is about 550 to 700 right now.
That's a lot then if you're bringing up like 80 dogs in there, if they're not
neutered. We pay for it to get done down there before they come.
Oh, okay. So they're already neutered and spayed.
They're already done before they come. It's cheaper down there, and it's so much easier on my fosters. It's easier on the dogs rather than they all come here. They get scattered all over. Mm-hmm. And then trying to get them into vet clinics around here is really tough as well. So we pay to have it done down there before they come.
Sure. So when the dogs are at the fosters and someone wants to adopt them, because you got fosters all over, it sounds like, how do you coordinate all that? Or how does that work?
Like the adoption part of
it? Yeah.
So if somebody wants to adopt a dog that is over in Green Bay and mm-hmm. they live, you know, in Winona,
yep.
sometimes the fosters will meet halfway. I tell the fosters they don't have to meet if they don't want to. It's really up to the adopter to do the driving, because our fosters foster and they're busy and they're taking care of this dog and they're, mm-hmm. you know, going to pick it up and they're whatever they're doing. Fostering is work, right?
Yep.
So I always say, you know, the adopter, if they really want the dog, they should commit to that. And we tell them where the dog is located, and sure. it's listed in their bio. So when they apply for the dog, they know where it's located.
Okay. So then do you have any say, like, do they send an application to you?
Yeah.
Because I know the Humane Society, I believe there's an application you fill out.
Yep.
So it's the same way for you then?
Yep.
So then you look over that and say, okay, these people seem like they're good. They check out. So if they come and meet you for the dog, they're good to go? Because I assume you're not at every single adoption.
Yeah, or any. Much.
Okay.
So, oh no, I don't go to the adoption, okay. but I'm involved in the, you know, looking at the applications and,
yep.
you know, I kind of micromanage the back end team a little bit for processing. No one's allowed to deny an application without me looking at it.
Okay.
We have two different people that review the applications to like for red flags. Does something look not right? And then one person makes a phone call and does like a pre-screening to see if we think they, you know, if it makes sense with the dog they applied for. And then we do education. So we talk about heartworm treatment and heartworm preventatives and crate training and nutrition and, you know, kind of talking about those things that are important in the dog's life going forward. And then our back end team, they look them up on social media and they kind of, you know, dig into their background to make sure that they don't have any weird criminal
sure.
stuff going on, which also keeps our foster family safe. And then we send it over to the foster family, and then the foster family, they will call and do their interview. And so really, if, you know, any one of those steps doesn't go through, then the application doesn't go through.
Okay. Now, you talk about some red flags. Obviously, a criminal background would be one of them. Are there other slight red flags that we wouldn't think about that kind of flag for that?
Yeah. So if somebody doesn't crate train their dog, that's a big thing for us because our dogs don't come from living in households typically. So crating is really important. And these dogs that are coming off the streets or out of shelters, a lot of times have never had a human or they've never had a house, so they can develop separation anxiety very quickly. So it's really important that they have that independence and alone time so that they become well balanced. So we talk about that, but you know, like if their dogs aren't altered, you know, that's a big deal. Or the dog lives in the garage.
What is an altered dog? What's that mean?
Neutered or spayed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. If the dog's not spayed or neutered.
Sure.
That's a big deal to us. I don't know. Sometimes it's not one particular thing. It's just a feeling. Like, mm-hmm. I'm just getting a weird feeling about this application. And you see some really weird stuff. Like, people just put really weird things sometimes. But you could have the worst application on paper, but then you call them and they're just wonderful.
Sure.
Or you have the best application, then you call them and they're terrible. So I've had them kind of the run of the mill, but we always have so many people looking at them that, you know, we want to make sure these dogs end up where they should end up and that they end up in good homes.
Oh, that is, at the end of the day, that's what really matters. Do you actually deny quite a few or not very many at all?
Not very many.
No.
We do some, but not very many.
Okay.
And anybody who's bitchy, if you're rude, if you're snotty, you're snarky, if you don't have time to talk to me, then, you know, I'm not going to move you forward because I can't work with somebody like that and mm-hmm. I have to be able to work with you. And, you know, you're adopting one of our dogs and it's precious to us. And there's a lot of information that I have to give you and communicate to you. So if I can't work with you, I I won't. So
sure. Yeah. And so, then, no, that's what you should do, because you're going all the way down to the south part of America or the United States and coming back up for a purpose. And you don't want to get ruined when you get back up here, the purpose mm-hmm. you just went and did. So,
well, and if you think about the foster family who goes out and they meet transport, they pick up this dog. The dog's stinky because it just traveled across the country. And if it's a puppy, it's probably poopy because, you know, they shit and the other dogs, puppies, they walk in it and then they crawl on each other, whatever. So they take these dogs home and they're scared and they're fearful. And, you know, these dogs, they don't know what's going on. Everything's different. And these people pour their heart and soul into these animals, right? And then they have them for weeks or months and they bond with them. So it's important to our foster families just as much that these dogs go to a place that's just as good or better than their foster family.
Sure, yeah.
You know?
Because they got their hearts attached to this
dog. They got their hearts attached, yeah.
Yeah, and they wanted the best for it, so I totally understand.
Yeah.
We had a dog, our last one, he was an English Mastiff, and he had mega esophagus.
Oh.
And then I took
him up. How did you deal with that with a Mastiff?
Oh, okay, here we go. This is fun. We like to talk about this because when people hear us say this, they're like, you did that for what? So he lived about 6.5 years old is all he made it to, unfortunately. And it was only because of the aggressive liver cancer that we found out on a Friday, and he was gone by that Thursday. So six
Crazy.
Days later. It was terrible because we bought him off of a farm from some people we knew. And so there was no AKC. There was nothing like that. We just bought him off of a farm. He was the runt of the litter. So he was a small one. He was only 160 pounds, I think, is the biggest he got up to. And his mom was 185 and the dad was 225.
Holy cow.
And he was only 160-ish.
Yeah, he was small then.
But everyone that saw him was like, what is that, a horse? And to us, it was, after a while, we didn't think twice about him.
Yeah.
But he was an amazing dog. Anyways, we found out that when we would feed him his kibble, he would kept hacking, and we thought maybe he had kennel cough. Nope, they said, no, it's not that. What was happening is kibble was getting stuck down in his throat, and then it would go into his lungs, and he had aspiration pneumonia.
Sure.
That happened twice. One time he almost died. We ran him over to Blue Pearl in Rochester when that used to be there.
Yeah.
And that was during COVID times, so they wouldn't let you in, which is even more defeating. You said, like, okay, so
Here's my dog.
And they're like, well, we'll call you in the morning to come pick him back up. And I'm like, well, how, you know, he's got 107 fever, I think they said. And they said, that's high for a dog. Obviously, it's really high for a human. You'd be dead probably.
Yeah.
They said, that's pretty high. And I go, so, like, is he's going to live, right? Like, well, we don't know that. I'm like, what? I'm like, it's that bad? So anyways, long story short, he made it. And then he aspirated one more time, and we knew exactly what to do, got him the help he needed. And then what would happen then, we found out, they said, well, maybe, you know, make his food softer. So we're like, okay, sounds good. We just pour water, kibble, it got mushy-ish. That wasn't good enough.
No.
So what we had to do for the last, I think it's probably about 5 years of his life, is we bought a blender puree thing, and we would dump his food in there and water in there, and it would blend up into like a milkshake consistency. And then we'd feed him in about 5 different sections each meal. So we would sit there.
So small meals.
Small. Well, they were still the normal size meal, but we would dump like a little bit in, and then he would have to eat it. And then we'd make him sit for a minute so gravity could pull it down into his stomach. And
that's a job.
It was because then you can imagine we want to go on vacation.
Yeah.
How to get someone
like,
to come
here,
over and do
take
that.
My dog.
No one would. So what we did is we would have my aunt who passed away. She actually came and babysat him twice, and she would do that process, but she really loved dogs. So we obviously trusted
her. You got
her.
Lucky.
Yes, we did.
You got lucky.
And so that was what we'd do, 2 meals a day. It took about 32 ounces of water just to get his food down to a milkshake consistency.
Because he had to eat like a lot of food, so to do that at every meal would take a long time.
Twice a day, every single day.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know if he ever grew out of it because of the fact that it became easier and easier. Maybe it was just because of us, but we would give him milk bones because he would chew them up. So we knew it was getting down, and we never went off of milk bones. We kept on milk bones, and we kept our science diet, some digestive one that cost $83 every 3 weeks for food. And so we poured our heart and soul into this guy, and he was amazing. And then the last week of his life, we had to take him to the emergency services in Eau Claire and then up to St. Paul because they were checking his enzyme levels in his liver, and they were like 14 times higher than high. And then they gave us the options of you can put him down on the spot, you can do surgery, and he might die on the operating table, or you'd have a 5% chance that it's going to cure it all if it hasn't spread too much, or give medicine and let him live out the last days of his life. And we did that third one. So we could just watch him decline. His urine was like almost brown by the time.
There's no quality of life.
It wasn't. And it was tough because he was mentally, he was all there. Everything had stunk. But so we poured our heart and soul. I think that weekend cost $8,000.
Yeah, dogs are expensive.
They are. But what we wouldn't have done for him. But anyways, yeah, we had to make his meal into a milkshake every single meal. There was no giving him kibble.
I've had some dogs in the rescue with mega esophagus. And we little high chairs.
We had a Bailey's chair.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I was thinking with a 150-pound dog, how are you managing that?
We had a custom-made one.
You did.
He didn't like it.
Well, I can't imagine.
So what we did is between each, so I think it was every time we did it, it'd be 5 pours into the bowl. So between each pour, we'd make him sit for a minute. So we'd bring it down, pour him some more, and then he would eat it. And then he would sit for another minute. And so it was about, I think I had it down to a science that I could have it done in less than 20 minutes each time.
Oh, that's not bad.
That wasn't terrible. And he may have had a motility issue, they said, because I took him up to the University of Minnesota and they did a whole study on him.
Really?
Yes. And they're like, well, we're not sure.
How much did that cost?
It wasn't that much. Oh. I mean, compared to the emergency vet bills, it wasn't nothing. Yeah. Like when I remember I get a bill from the vet, I'm like, $300, that's nothing for this guy. I'm like, I'm used to 3,000 each time. So, but we had a really great 6.5 years with this guy. And you know, the saddest part is he knew he was having a baby or we were having a baby and he could just tell. And we had the crib up and he would go lay by it every so often.
That's so sweet.
It was. We had a photo. He chose our daughter's name too. We put him on 2 tennis balls. He was the best. He was a big part of our life.
And sad that he's not here anymore.
He died 3 weeks before she was born. So
that's sad.
Yeah, I'm a dog lover, as well as obviously you are too.
Sometimes I wonder.
Yeah.
Well, now, but then you get to like in my role. How do I stop? Who's ever going to do it? Who is going
to
do it?
So that was getting me to my next point: is where does the future of this go? You said it's bigger than what you could handle alone. So you have a huge team. What about 5 years from now? I mean, I think it's just going to continue to grow. I don't think it's going backwards or staying stagnant. I think you're just going to keep going up. So what does the next 5 years look like?
We're going up. So we, you know, that's why we bought the bus, because we're not going to go backwards. Like I was saying before, I'm at a breaking point. I can't continue to do both, nor should I continue to do both. You know, I'm not 25 anymore. I'm sick all the time because I'm burnt out. Like I work from the time I wake up in the morning until, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night because my phone never stops. And all weekend, every weekend, I don't take days off. And so we're finally at the point now where the rescue can start paying me a salary.
Yep. Okay.
So I can quit my job, which feels weird to say because it's nonprofit and whatever, but it's a job. It's a job. So it's a little awkward for me yet, but I'm excited about it. And then I'm opening a dog boarding business in Elma.
Awesome.
Hopefully July 1st. I'm a little bit behind with, you know, everything that happened over the winter and whatever. So I got a little bit behind, but I like working a full-time job, running the rescue. I didn't have time to put my business plan together and get the permits and like all the stuff that needs to be done.
Sure.
So I'm waiting for board approval to approve my proposal for salary, but I'm pretty sure they will, as long as everything looks good.
Yep.
And then I can quit my job.
So there's a board that you have to go to now.
Oh, yeah. We have a board of directors.
See, that's...
We're fancy.
I know. That's when you know you're getting big, is when you have a board of directors.
Yeah. I just restructured it, actually, because our fiscal year for, like, the board of directors, I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Always March 1st of every year.
Okay.
So I just restructured it, so I'm not going to be the president of the rescue anymore, not the president of the board anymore. I am off the board of directors, and I am now going to be the executive director.
Okay.
And I'm not on the board anymore. That's a scary thing.
Because does it take away something from you, like control of stuff?
No, but it feels like it does.
Yeah, it does. When you say it like that, it does feel like I should be the head.
Yeah, I should be the president.
Yes,
right?
I used to be the.
But now I'm just going to be a director. But it really doesn't. I'll still have all the authority and like I'll still make all the decisions and all of that stuff. The board will continue to vote on like big issues like budgeting and stuff like that. But it was a hard decision. I just made that decision in the last week, but I decided to become a paid employee.
Sure.
Instead of leading the rescue. And if I'm going to be a paid employee, I need to be an employee.
Yep.
And the board needs to make the decisions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was the right way to go if this is how we're going to do it. But I just feel like we're just going to continue to grow.
Yeah.
And get bigger.
I don't see why you would go backwards or stay the same. I don't think so. I mean, you already have 15,000 followers just on Facebook. In 7 years, that's pretty good just by rescuing animals or dogs. And people like this. They like this. This is something that I think hits home to a lot of people, especially in the Midwest. Like you said earlier, dogs here are family. So I think that's a big key to this. I had a question that just slipped my mind. I forgot what it was. I know what it was. Do you think now that if you become a paid employee, are you going to be able to rescue more animals then?
I hope so.
Okay.
I think a lot of people will be excited. Like I'm in school right now to be a get my license for dog training.
Okay.
I have 7 years of doing dog stuff, so a lot of it is redundant, but I'll actually hold the title. So I'm going to start doing dog training in the area, which is something that we need. Like there's just not enough in Winona, Wabasha, like our local area. So it's definitely needed. I want to start working on the hard cases, helping people with the dogs that are unmanageable or like my dog is destructive or whatever. So that is one of my focus points. And then I'll be able to help more dogs that have special needs because I'll have the time. Right now I don't have the time.
Sure.
So bringing in those dogs that have those special needs will be important and extremely exciting.
Yeah. Cause that sounds like you deal with it quite a bit. And if you can focus 100% of your time on this
rescue.
I think you're going to really enjoy it. And I mean, you got to look back and say, holy cow, look at where we are in 6 to 7 years from where we were. Do you ever look back and go, holy cow?
Our first transport to Texas was three of us and in a minivan. And I was like, okay, we're only going to bring back one dog per person. Just one dog. And,
sure.
You know, because it was a big deal, right?
You're
going to Texas. And I think we ended up bringing back six. We don't remember the ride back. We woke up at a wayside in the middle of the night, not knowing how we got there. Someone forgot their purse at the gas station, so we had to turn around and go back. I mean, it was just crazy. That was our first trip. And now look at us. Like, we have this big... We're organized. We know what we're doing. We have knowledge. We know how to keep the dogs healthy and safe, and our volunteers are safe. And one of the things I keep wanting to say too is part of maybe the reason why we're successful is we're not catty and we're not bitchy and we don't have any drama. So
that's awesome.
There's no drama. You got 160 women. There's a couple of men, but the majority is women and there's no drama. Like that hardly ever happens. And so that's important. Like our focus is the dogs or the rescue. It's not who is doing what to who.
Sure.
So I think that's been huge, and maybe that's part of why people like us. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. It's fun to be part of.
That's really, really neat that you have all these people that are involved now, from three people in a van to what I mean, you brought the bus here today, and it's nice and clean for the time being, like I said, but it is very organized in there. And for those who are listening, obviously, if you know what Tales of Hope is, going from a minivan to a 15-passenger van to now this, and how organized you are.
A doggy shuttle.
Yes.
It needs to have dogs on the windows.
Yes.
You know, it needs to be black. So, like, that's the goal. But obviously, there's other places our money needs to go, like Bruce, who is having the amputations. Yep. And we have some dogs like Nala, who's been in our care for 2 years now. She has EPI and she's diabetic, so she can't produce enzymes to break down food. So she'll never get adopted. But her monthly cost to keep her in care is about $500.
Okay.
And she'll never get adopted, because who's going to adopt a dog that's 5 years old that costs $500 a month for
That's a tough one.
Even though she's a great dog.
Yep.
So, you know, there's just like, other things that come before the wrapping of the van. But
yep.
It's on my list of things I want to do.
And maybe there's someone out there that wants to donate wraps.
So see, and that's one of the things too that you talk about, like, is it hard to ask for money? Yeah, to wrap the van.
Yep.
Yeah. And I thought about, you know, like maybe we can get sponsors and we could put their logo on it or whatever. I'm not good at that stuff. That's somebody else is good at that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like the decision maker and who lives and who dies and who's going to the vet and what are they going to the vet for? Like, I'm that person. I'm not a give me money. This is where we're, you know, whatever. I'm not that person. I never will be.
Just remember, folks, if you decide you would like to donate for the wrap, it won't make her look so weird when she pulls up to the gas station and the shuttle is just barking for no reason. Yeah. People will understand.
And your logo could be on there because just imagine the attention
sure.
that is going to go to that. I mean, yeah. It's already an eye catcher.
Yeah, it already is an eye catcher. And if you had it wrapped and it was pretty funky.
Yeah.
And it's barking.
When we used to do the parades in Buffalo City, well, we still do the parades in Buffalo City.
Yep, I'm usually there every year.
Yeah, so yep. You've seen us.
Yep.
We used to do Who Let the Dogs Out, and we would play it on a speaker.
Yeah, yep, I remember that.
Yeah, but we don't do that anymore, no. That was when we had the minivan.
Okay.
And then my husband used to pull, like, a trailer, and we would all be on the trailer. Now we just drive the big van, and I suppose this year we'll probably drive the shuttle.
Yep. So you're looking for sponsors for the shuttle.
Yeah, I mean, it seems crazy, but I think we're probably getting to that point now. And I'm looking for, you know, if I'm really going to work for the rescue full time, we're going to have other sources of income. It just can't be adoption fees because our adoption fees, while some people think are high, they're not. And they don't, you know, people don't realize what the cost is per dog.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add, and that's, you know, medications and preventatives and yep. whatever. So we're going to have to look at regular donors or
sure.
sponsorship. I don't know. I'm looking into some of that stuff, but.
Well, these are all the things that you probably never thought you were going to get into.
I might have more time now though to focus that on will some be nice. Of that stuff I just haven't had time to focus on before.
That'll be nice.
You know.
Well, as we're starting to wind down here, I'd love for you to tell us some of the highs that have happened in these last 7-ish years, just starting this out in 2019 we just started 2026 not too long ago. What are some of the highs that you can remember for doing this?
Oh, I think the biggest reward out of running this rescue has been the people that I've met and the person that I've become.
Sure.
I was never a people person. My whole life I was scared of people, and I've met so many amazing and wonderful people that have shown me like how to be and helped me to become the person that I wanted to be. And I think that's been huge because it's allowed me to grow this rescue and save more animals.
Sure.
And build the connections that we need with the vet clinics and with Elena at Paws of Promise in El Paso, Texas, and Angela at Care Rescue in Coweta, Oklahoma. I got to get their names in there. If anybody wants to check them out, that's where our dogs come from. They're both wonderful, wonderful ladies that run amazing organizations. But yeah, that's like my biggest tie. There's been so many, like I rescued some pigs. Oh my gosh. I got rescued pigs. I did, but I got a murder parrot once.
A what?
A murder parrot.
What's that?
A guy was murdered.
Oh.
Literally.
Oh, like the parrot was in the house.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And that's what everybody called him, was the murder parrot.
Did he have some
I hope
words?
Nobody watches this and is offended by that. But
oh, man. I was probably excited. Laughing, wondering what's going on. So there's a parrot that was in the house and someone got murdered?
Yeah.
Did the parrot say anything?
What did that... I don't know. That bird used to talk, and it used to mimic me.
Oh, no.
So, like, if Addie would be like, Mom, what was the bird's name? I can't remember. It would go, what? And, like, sounded just like me. It was crazy.
No way.
Or she would bark like a dog.
Oh, the parrot would?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I was so excited. I wanted to keep her. She was a, what do you call them, gray, like a big African gray.
Okay.
And I was so excited about her, but she would bite. And, like, her beak was so strong, it would puncture my skin.
Whoa.
So I was like, that wasn't any fun. So I mean, there's been some like really cool, and of course now we have the bus.
Yeah.
So now here's like the next thing that we want to do. The shelter in El Paso, Texas, I've went down to the one in Coweta, mm-hmm. and I walked through and I picked the five dogs that have been there the longest and pulled them out of the shelter.
Sure.
Right? So now my next one is I want to go to El Paso and I want to do the same thing. I want to be on my phone, people tag dogs, and then we bring them all back.
Okay.
Because there's like 2,000 dogs in their one shelter in wow. El Paso.
So I assume it's a non-kill shelter then?
No.
Okay. Oh, it is or it isn't?
No, it's not. Oh, okay. I mean, yes, it is. It is.
It is. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that's why they had 2,000 dogs is because they were a non-kill shelter.
They euthanize for space.
Yep.
There's so many dogs.
Wow.
There's so many dogs. And so, yeah, it's sad.
That's sad. I would not want to be on that part, on that end of things. That sounds...
Yeah, Elena's video chatted with me a couple times, and she just walks around, and, like, you see all these dogs in there. They're not nice shelters. They're not like they are here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're doing their best, but they have, like, 2,000 dogs.
Yeah.
That's just... You can't even comprehend. And so I really want to take the bus down and just, like... go through and have people tag dogs and then we bring them home. I don't know. It might be kind of a nightmare.
You'll figure out a way.
We'll see.
Well, that's part of the goals in the next 5 years is to do a live auction. Well, not really an auction, but a live tagging. Here
live
we go.
Tagging of
so
dogs.
Tagging means that they want to foster the dog. Okay. Cause in this area, tagging a deer means you're going to kill it and they're going to eat it.
Yeah, it's two totally different things.
Two different things. So tagging is actually not what you think, people. Tagging is you're going to foster the dog. All right.
We're going to tag the dog. That means the dog is getting a freedom ride.
Yes. Well, is there anything that we haven't covered that you want to make sure that we hit? Because I know you sent me the notes. I think we hit everything, but is there something that you can think of that we didn't hit? That's important.
I think my one thing that I just wanted to say, like if people want to be involved, but you don't have any money. You don't have to have money. You can volunteer your time. You can come and help clean the van after transport. You can, you know, everything that we do is remote, so you can work behind the scenes from your computer at home in Illinois. You know, there's so many opportunities. Or if you don't want to do that, you can share our posts on our page.
Sure.
You know, get us out there and so people are seeing what we're doing. So there's a lot of things that people can do to help. Just start small.
That aren't monetary.
Yeah.
Yep.
The cleaning of the van. That's a big one.
And then the bus got bigger. The shuttle got bigger. So it's going to be a little bit more cleaning.
Yeah. You can imagine how gross it is. If we could get people to clean the van, that is always great. But I usually end up doing it.
Oh, okay. So there's volunteer opportunities. There's kids that need volunteer hours sometimes in high school.
If your kid is in trouble and needs a punishment...
Boom.
Cleaning the bus after transport would be perfect. I do have two volunteers that come and help sometimes, but historically it's generally me. But
sure.
That'd be a great punishment for some kids.
Yeah, you know, because then they'll realize this is probably a stinky job.
It's a shitty job.
A shitty job, literally.
Yeah.
And it might make them think twice.
Maybe.
That's really good. Well, before we end, though, here at Brews and Crews and also the sponsor of the show, Jacobson Real Estate, we have a donation that we would like to give to Tales of Hope right now as well. It's $100.
Thank you.
We obviously believe in dogs. Dogs are a very big part of...
Thank you for that.
You're welcome, absolutely. Can't help out maybe in certain ways, but we like to donate money towards humane
vet
societies care. and vet bills and whatever it might go towards. So that is your guys'. We are very happy to have you here and
this
doing
be
this.
This will be Bruce's first donation.
Bruce's first donation.
Bruce's first donation.
So Bruce's wheelchair, possibly.
Bruce is going to be in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I said, I have not had a Bruce before, so.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could be the first to donate towards Bruce. That's amazing.
To be determined.
Yeah. Well, before we actually wrap, I'd love you to tell people where they can find you or how they can get a hold of you or anybody.
Yeah. So our website is www.talesofhopewi.org. There's a contact us page on there. You don't have my personal contact information on there anymore, but I do get those emails and I see them. So if anybody, you know, wants to reach out, you certainly can. We have a Facebook page, so we're constantly posting on there. Basically the best ways to reach us.
Okay. And I'll plug those in the show notes, folks. So if you just want to go down, you can click right on to what she was just talking about, and it'll take you right there. You can get a hold of them if you want to maybe donate or volunteer some time or maybe become a foster.
And our Facebook page and our Instagram, our TikTok is all linked on our website.
Perfect. So it's just a one-stop shop.
Yeah.
Perfect. That's what I did with my website,
super
too.
Yeah, super easy. Easy.
Is there any final thoughts that you have or wanted to express or share?
I don't think so, but thank you for having me. This was fun.
You're welcome. You said this was your first podcast you've ever done?
Yeah, and we'll have to do this again.
Yes.
After I go down and pull 50 dogs from the shelter.
Well, that's awesome. I want to thank you for taking time out of your day and coming on and sharing, because people want to hear your story and hear the Tales of Hope story. So this is awesome that you're on here doing this. So I just want to say thank you for one more time. We'll cheers our waters.
Cheers.
And don't forget, you can like, share, subscribe, and 5-star comment. Share this with someone maybe this resonates with. But we will see you next week for another episode of Brews and Cruise. Cheers.